Welcome to the second half of the presentation on international historic preservation law for the Real Archaeology course. We're on slide 5, right? We have just discussed some of the differences between common and civil law countries. Now I want to talk about the effect that these different legal systems have on trafficking in antiquities. One issue created by the disjuncture or disconnect between common and civil law countries relates to trafficking in antiquities. In civil law countries, a person who buys stolen property in ignorance of the fact that it's stolen is normally held harmless and can keep the property. In other words, they haven't committed a crime. So if I steal something and I sell it to you and you do not know or should not have known that it was stolen, you know, you haven't done anything wrong and you can keep the property even if the fact that it was stolen comes to light. In common law countries, on the other hand, as you may know, stolen goods cannot be legally sold in most cases, right? So if I steal a car and I sell it to you and I get caught, or, you know, the car is found, it gets returned to the owner, and, you know, you may have lost your money, right? So if you were ignorant of the fact that it was stolen and you didn't yourself do anything wrong, you didn't, you know, lie on the documentation or anything like that, you, as the buyer, you may not have committed a crime, but you're still out the property, right? This has created both sort of problems in dealing with the trafficking in antiquities, because the issue has been traditionally that most looted material has been looted from civil law countries in which that material was government property and it was excavated without authorization, and therefore it's essentially stolen property. So you might well ask yourself, how is it that, you know, stolen property can be bought and sold around the world and bought by museums and put on display and nobody can seem to do anything about it, which has been the situation for a very long time. Although, fortunately, that situation is changing. The problem has been that civil law countries have not recognized legally, that stolen property has to be returned to its owner if it's been sold to an innocent buyer. So what would happen very often is that antiquities would be smuggled, stolen, looted antiquities would be smuggled or shipped to a country like Switzerland, although this is no longer true, but traditionally they went to Switzerland or sometimes a few other countries. And in Switzerland, they were either sold or sort of what? Sold to a straw purchaser, or a sort of a charade of a sale was made so that there would be an exchange of documentation showing that the material had been sold. And once it had been sold, it was clean in the sense that whoever owned it after the sale could not be compelled to return it because they were, in theory, an innocent buyer. And so, you know, that sort of, it was a way of laundering antiquities so that they could then be legitimately sold or auctioned off at Christie's or Sotheby's or bought by museums, right? So once they had changed hands in an apparently, or at least superficially, legal sale, they were fair game and they could be sold openly. And this was important not only for, say, European museums to be able to buy stuff, but also for American and British museums to buy stuff, because, you know, some of the biggest marketplaces were Britain and the United States and some of the other common law countries. Once the antiquities had been laundered in a civil law country, they could then be legitimately sold in common law countries as well, and they couldn't really be returned, or their repatriation could not be compelled. Well, you know, this has been a long-standing problem, and, you know, many of the countries involved, you know, the countries where this stuff is getting sold, that is to say the marketplace countries that create the demand, had little motivation to change the system, because they felt, at least on an official level, that they were benefiting from it because they were filling their museums with antiquities. And it was countries like Mexico and Peru and Egypt and Iraq that were really suffering the losses, and, you know, who really cared about those benighted third world countries, and they had a lot of stuff anyway, and, you know, what was really the harm? And the lobbies, believe it or not, of the art collectors in museums were very powerful and for many, many years very successful in blocking any kind of change to the laws or having the United States or Britain or many other countries sign on to any of the treaties that were designed to prevent this. Eventually, there have been developed or negotiated a couple of international treaties or conventions that have been designed to deal with this problem, which is to say, basically make it illegal to buy or sell antiquities that are stolen from other countries, you know, that are exported from their countries of origins in violation of those countries' laws, which, you know, in one way or another would have prohibited or made it impossible for those materials or those objects to be legally exported or alienated in the country. So one of these is the 1970 UNESCO Convention, and the other is the 1995 UNIDROIT Convention on Stolen or Illegally Exported Cultural Objects. So this is the issue with illicit trafficking or trafficking in antiquities. The 1970 UNESCO Convention on, and I've just changed to slide number 6, on the means of prohibiting and preventing the illicit import, export, and transfer of cultural property was the first international legal instrument designed to tackle these issues and is helpful in preventing smuggling. So the governments of the states parties, which is to say the countries that are signatory to the convention, which are now about 92, which is about half the countries in the world, have undertaken or have agreed to take action at the request of another country that's signatory to the convention, to seize cultural property that has been stolen and to collaborate in preventing major crises in the protection of cultural heritage, as was the case in Afghanistan, where there was a tremendous amount of looting. After the Soviets retreated or abandoned the country, and then under the Taliban, you know, there was the destruction of the Bamiyan Buddhas and things like that. The UNESCO Convention seems to have had considerable impact, although it's been kind of slow going. The United States signed on but didn't implement the entire treaty in our own statutes. So we signed it, but we didn't really implement it, and it we didn't implement the most important part, which was Article 10A, if I believe, which is the one that really obliges us to like seize and return stolen property. But eventually, you know, the United States has been getting, which, as the largest economy in the world, has an important influence on what goes on economically in all of these kinds of marketplaces. And of course, you know, given our sort of military footprint and stuff like that, we have a lot of influence, or we can have a lot of influence on what goes on. But we've been getting dramatically better, I have to say, in the last few years in complying with this convention that we've signed and also enforcing these issues. So in recent years, one very prominent collector was very publicly prosecuted by the FBI and the Customs Service for smuggling antiquities. And I'll tell you, the rich people who collect antiquities really, really do not want to go to jail. You know, these people whose money drives the market, you know, they want to have beautiful stuff, but they're not, you know, this is a hobby for them. You know, it's not like they're addicted to heroin and they can't stop. This is a hobby. They don't want to go to jail for a hobby. And so prosecutions like that have had a very potent impact on the market, as has raids on museums. The FBI and the Customs Service have, like, gone out and raided a bunch of museums and seized stuff at the behest of foreign countries, you know. And I'll tell you, the same kind of thing applies. You know, if you're the Getty Museum or the Los Angeles County Museum of Art or, you know, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, you know, you may think you're very clever for having bought, you know, art on the black market for many years. But, you know, the last thing the curators want to see is to see, you know, the federal law enforcement officials, you know, rushing in with automatic weapons and, you know, black bulletproof suits and, like, seizing works of art. You know, even if the curators don't actually go to jail, that is not something you want to put on your resume as a professional, right? So the UNESCO Convention, as well as its more, in slide 7, it says there are 103 countries that have joined the convention. So that's probably a more recent number. here I explain some of the issues with the United States, application of the convention. And also, it's noteworthy that Switzerland has been, for a very long time, a really major center for the trade, for trade in illegal trade in art and antiquities, and they have acceded to the convention in relatively recent years and have implemented it very, very comprehensively. Now, finally, if you go to slide 8, you'll see that it says repatriation, and this is here. I talk very briefly about the UNIDROIT convention, which is really designed to harmonize the laws of participating countries, and this is part of the way in which countries are trying to address the issue of the loophole or the conflicts between the civil law and common law countries, as I discussed above. And so, quite frankly, things in the last, I don't know, decade or so have really been looking up. And it's very encouraging. In conclusion, there's quite a variety of historic preservation and archaeological laws around the world, but that variation is patterned in part by the nature of the legal system found in the country. There are other patterns as well, such as patterns that are influenced by the nature of the archaeological remains, so that countries that have unusually spectacular or charismatic or valuable prehistoric materials, like graves full of gold, tend to have certain kinds of laws because perhaps they've suffered from looting more than other countries with less spectacular or charismatic remains. Countries with large indigenous populations may have laws that are different from countries that don't have indigenous populations, or where the majority culture is the indigenous population. So there are a variety of different laws out there. I'm pleased to be able to say that the issue of looting and trafficking in archaeological materials and antiquities has been getting better slowly but steadily since the 1970s, or perhaps starting in the 70s, and accelerating some in the 1980s, and that things have improved in particular in the United States rather dramatically in the last 10 to 20 years. However, looting remains a significant problem around the world, as we'll see in another presentation on international treaties. Thanks very much for listening.